Our next series of programs, as I said, we're calling on experts from our state university system, starting with the University of Akron. Dr. John Green is the director of the Ray Bliss Institute of Applied Politics that you may have heard of, and he's well known for his work on politics and religion, too. He'll be speaking on the five Ohios, political culture in the Buckeye State. He does have slides, so make sure we think everyone can see. And then we'll go into, our other speakers are here, so these are relatively short presentations, but Dr. Tom Bridgman and Dr. Ned Hill are both here. Dr. Bridgman's algal blooms presentation will be in this room, and then we'll go into the president's room over there, and Dr. Hill will be speaking on the Ohio economy over there at lunchtime. And then we'll be back in this room right after lunch for the director of the State Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, talking about the state's response to the opioid epidemic right now. So with that, I'll give it to Dr. Green.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be back at a new members orientation here in Columbus. Although I must say it's a good thing when I drove down that I had a plan B for parking. Always a good thing to have. What I'd like to do is talk very briefly about the political diversity of Ohio, have a few definitional slides that we'll look at very briefly, and then I want to look at some public opinion data. And one really good way to look at the political diversity of Ohio is to look at it by regions. And that's what the term there, the five Ohios, refers to. And then we'll, of course, because we just had a really interesting election, we'll look at some election data by region as well. Whoops. Political culture is defined by scholars and by journalists as the underlying beliefs that give meaning and purpose to politics. And lots of things matter in politics, demography, the state of the economy, and so forth, but ultimately these beliefs are the filters through which people interpret those things politically. Many of these beliefs have to do with how the political process does and should operate, and a lot of it has to do with how people interpret political issues. You know, why would a particular thing become an issue and another thing not become one? Overall, Ohioans have what scholars call an individualistic political culture, which is that we tend to think of citizens as individuals, and those individuals belong to groups and belong to communities. In that regard, Ohio voters tend to see the political process in very pragmatic terms. That's different than a lot of the other states in the United States, and they tend to see issues in transactional terms, or as some of my colleagues would put it, who gets what, when, and how. You can be critical of that, but that's the way Ohioans voters tend to think about these things. And the quote at the bottom actually comes from a former member of the General Assembly who once explained to me this individualistic political culture by saying, "No one gets everything they want, but everyone gets what they really need." Now, that may be more of an aspiration than a reality in every circumstance, but it gives you a sense of the nature of how Ohioans think about politics. One really good way to illustrate these differences is by looking at the different regions of Ohio. Most scholars would agree that Ohio has five major regions. Some people would say six. We have a particular definition we use at the Bliss Institute that we'll look at in a moment. But what's interesting about these regions is each of them has at least one large city, a large metropolitan area, extensive suburbs, and rural areas that are all part of that a particular region. And these regions reflect combinations of course, geography, which also have to do with the original settlement patterns of Ohio, ethnicity, race, economics, a whole bunch of things. But if you were to take the data we're going to look at in just a moment, opinion data, and you were to throw some high-powered statistics at it, you would find that overall region, that is to say the part of the state where people live, whether it's in a city, a rural area, or a suburb, turns out to be statistically significant. And that's because regions are more than just the sum of their parts. There's similar media markets, similar cultural patterns, and traditions of political leadership. Well, there are the five Ohios as we define them, and these are the definitions we'll use today. The the region of Ohio that I come from is northeastern Ohio, which is the blue part up there. And then, of course, we have southeastern Ohio, sometimes known as the Appalachian region of Ohio, central Ohio, the areas around Columbus, northwestern Ohio, which is a really interesting place because it has lots of industrial cities, Toledo being the biggest, but there are a bunch of smaller ones in that area as well. And then southwestern Ohio, Cincinnati, Dayton, and Springfield. Now, as I indicated earlier, some people like to look at six regions of Ohio, and they take this region out here and make it a sixth region. And if you thought only in terms of media markets, that makes a lot of sense. But if you think in sort of broader political terms, the five Ohios, as we've defined them, work just a little bit better. But the definitions don't matter that much. If you moved one county, one place across one of these imaginary borders or the other way, things wouldn't change really very much. The five Ohios vary systematically in terms of attitudes on politics and on issues, and we'll look at some examples. And then we'll turn to voting behavior. And it turns out that voting behavior matters a lot by region as well. The most common difference in Ohio politics from this perspective is between northeastern Ohio and southwestern Ohio. And the other regions tend to most often fall sort of in between, sometimes almost in lockstep, between Cleveland and Cincinnati. But as we'll see, there are other regional patterns as well. Each of these regions has its own distinct culture, and so there are issues that separate out the regions in different ways. Now this is, we're going to look at some public opinion data. Most of this data was collected at the Bliss Institute in 2015, in the fall of 2015, just as the presidential election was heating up. And on all of these slides where you see the, I don't know if you can see it that well, but there's always kind of a checkered set of bars, and that's for the state as a whole. But that gives us a sense of how the regions differ from the state of the whole. This is a dichotomous question. If you just had to choose, what's the most important role of government? Is it to provide public services, or is it to maintain social order? Now, most people in Ohio would like to have a lot of both of those things, right? But the purpose of this question was to get people to make choices between services versus public order. And here's where you see that a northeast-southwest dichotomy really, really well. Up in northeastern Ohio, voters, almost 60% of them prefer more services over maintaining order. Not that maintaining order is bad, but if you get down to southwestern Ohio, only 43% favor services over order, and again, close to 60% favor social order over services. And then the rest of the regions kind of fall in between. Northwestern Ohio, a little bit like northeastern Ohio, southeastern Ohio, this area right there, a little bit like southwestern Ohio, and Columbus kind of right in the middle. And this particular slide, the central Ohio looks a lot like the state as a whole. That won't always be the case as we look at these sorts of things. And there you can see the differences in individualistic culture, right? In northeastern Ohio, it's more focused on the provision of services to communities, whereas in southwestern Ohio, that individual is focused more on maintaining order among individuals. Well, here's another example of sort of standard dichotomy, that debate that we often have in American politics versus policies that create jobs and policies that create greater social equality. Again, it's a dichotomous question because we want people to choose between things that most people would regard as good. And here you see really the big differences are between Northwest Ohio and Southeast Ohio. Up in Northwest Ohio, whoops, which is right there, you see a lot of emphasis on growing jobs. Also in Southeast Ohio, these are areas that have had real problems in job growth in recent times. On the other hand, if you look up here in the Cleveland area, northeastern Ohio, much more emphasis on the question of equality. And of course, most people would like to have both of those. Questions like this do vary over time. And so the overall numbers are less interesting for the purposes of this discussion than the patterns among the regions. We can go back and look at that same question 20 years ago, where we found much more emphasis on equality rather than on job growth. So a lot of this just has to do, you know, with the context of when people were asked about these sorts of questions. Here's another perennial favorite. Should we reduce or expand the size of the federal government? Now, I know you all are involved in another government, a state government, but this is a question about the federal government. And as you can see, in the fall of 2015, Ohioans overall thought the federal government should be smaller. Now, we have to look at this data with this kind of data with something of a grain of salt, because most Ohioans can't clearly distinguish between what the federal government does, the state governments do, and the local governments do. Because after all, those things are all involved with each other, right? Lots of federal programs operate through the states and so forth. But here you see an interesting difference between southeastern Ohio, in many ways the poorest region of the state, much more emphasis on reducing the size of the federal government, as opposed to up in northeastern Ohio. Well, there's still a large majority in this particular poll, but not nearly as much. And here you can see some examples of the influence of political culture. One might have assumed that people in a poorer region would want to see the government expand. But in this particular data, it actually works kind of the opposite way. And that shows you how people's values and interests influence the way they interpret events. Here's a really interesting one that gets at the political process, and one I think that's particularly relevant today. To what extent are you willing to compromise in an election? And the way that's actually worded is, I'd rather lose an election than compromise on the issues. That's the no question. And then the yes question is, I'm perfectly willing to compromise if it means winning and having influence over public policy. And here we see a distinction between Western and Eastern Ohio. Eastern Ohio, Northeastern Ohio, and, Northeastern Ohio and Southeastern Ohio, at least in this poll, have a much higher number of people who don't want to compromise. But if you look in Western Ohio, Southwestern and Northwestern Ohio, many more people who are willing to compromise. So there's another example of how political culture plays it out. I don't know, maybe there's something in the water in Western Ohio that makes people more compromising. I don't know, but it's kind of interesting to see that difference. Another kind of regional pattern we sometimes see. Now, this question comes actually from a little bit earlier, before the Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriages, and when there was a big debate in Ohio as to whether we should amend the state constitution in that regard. This is no longer a relevant point, of course, in policy terms, but it does show a particular pattern, which is that on many, many social issues, things like marriage, abortion, and so forth, a lot of the contrast is between central Ohio, which is the most cosmopolitan part of Ohio. Now, that's not code for best, it's just the most cosmopolitan area in the other parts of the state. And I mislabeled this a little bit. It's not just southern, it's southern and northeastern versus central Ohio. But look up at northeastern Ohio. On that particular issue, people in northeastern Ohio were almost evenly split at that time. Well, that's because up in northeastern Ohio, there are lots of religious communities, Catholics, Baptists, and so forth, that take a little bit different view on the legalizing of same-sex unions. Very similar, in fact, to similar communities in other parts of Ohio. And here's another example of a social issue. This was whether we should repeal the Common Core in education. And here we see that the strongest support, interestingly enough, for repealing it was in central Ohio. And a lot of that had to do with the criticism of whether education should be centralized or whether it should be decentralized. And so, of course, as you know, it's mostly decentralized in Ohio. And you see some kind of interesting patterns, though, in an issue like this. Down in southwestern Ohio, in this poll, there's actually a majority of the people for not repealing the Common Core. That seems sort of odd when you think of that region of Ohio as being in some ways more conservative, but I think that fits with the very first slide we looked at, an emphasis on order. And you know, having common educational standards as part of order. Here too, you see the same pattern in northeastern Ohio that we saw on same-sex marriage, which is very, very evenly divided. So you know, we oftentimes think of northeastern Ohio as the most liberal part of the state. Well, on some issues it is, but on some issues it's much more evenly divided or even conservative. So there's some examples of some public opinion data from last year that shows some of the regional variations and why Ohio is so diverse politically. it's easy to say we're diverse politically because we're diverse demographically, but there's also these different political cultures that help mediate those factors when it comes to making political choices. Well, now let's look at voting behavior. This is how the five Ohios look in terms of the two-party vote from 1980 to 2010. In just a minute, we'll look at the most recent election. And you can see the dominant patterns. Northeastern Ohio, much more Democratic, that is much more blue. Southwestern Ohio, much more Republican, much more red. But notice all the variation within the regions. And partly that's because of how these political cultures play out in the different parts of these regions. You know, sometimes people have described the regions of Ohio as city-states, you know, kind of going back to the ancient Greeks. And there's some truth to that. We're not going to focus on all that variation, but it does reveal how powerful these simple measures of political culture are that say you'd have a systematic difference between southeastern Ohio and northwestern Ohio, even though there's a lot of diversity within each of these regions. Well, let's look at the presidential election. This compares President Obama's vote by region in 2012 to Secretary Clinton's vote in 2016. The dark blue bars are the Obama vote, and that pattern shows a very typical pattern when Democrats win the presidency in Ohio. And it works in many statewide offices as well, which is very strong support in northeastern Ohio, almost 60% of the vote. Strong showing in central Ohio, an area that's become increasingly Democratic over time. And then doing pretty well in northwest Ohio, in southwest Ohio, and also getting the Democratic share of the vote in southwestern Ohio as well. That's a very, very typical pattern of by region. Again, you see in the dark blue bars, you see the northeast versus the southwest distinction. But if we look at Secretary Clinton's vote, of course, she lost Ohio, and she has a pattern that looks a lot like Democrats that lose in Ohio or Republicans that win. And we'll look a little more carefully at the Trump vote in just a second. But one of the big differences was Secretary Clinton did not do as well as Democrats usually do in northeastern Ohio, which is not only a heavily Democratic area, but has lots and lots of votes in it. Huge problem was in southwest Ohio, where the Clinton vote dropped off dramatically from the Obama vote. But notice that Secretary Clinton did just as well as Barack Obama in central Ohio, which is really kind of interesting. It suggests that there's a deeper change going on in that part of the state. Well, let's compare the Obama vote to the Trump vote. Two winners, right? A winner in 2012 and a winner in 2016. And as you can see, if you take, this is just the two-party vote. We took out the minor parties because it's difficult to compare when you do that. But that's, if you look at the Trump margin of 55% of the two-party vote and Obama's margin of 53%, that's within the margin of error of almost any poll you take in Ohio. So very similar overall outcome, but of course different patterns by region. One of the reasons Donald Trump won is that he was able to do a lot better in northeastern Ohio than Republicans typically do. The region still went Democratic for Secretary Clinton, but that helped him a lot. But notice the really big game was in southwest Ohio. Now, in many ways, southwest Ohio has become the swing region of the state, the southeast region. One of my friends, some of you may know, Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch, likes to say that people in southeastern Ohio are always unhappy because, you know, they're culturally conservative, but they're economically impoverished, and so they swing around a lot, you know, from one party to another. Other regions of Ohio have periods of relative happiness, and so the partisanship is more stable. One of the great concerns of the Republican Party was that Donald Trump will not be able to do well in southwest Ohio, and in fact, he did. So part of his success was he got votes that would otherwise be Democratic, but he also held a lot of Republican votes. But noticed, he didn't do very well didn't improve his vote share in central Ohio. compared to the previous election. Now, that was one place where there was a lot of concern by Republicans that particularly suburban voters in the Columbus area and central Ohio would not vote a Republican. And they voted about like they usually do, but there was no dramatic decline, but there were no gains there either. Well, why does this matter? Well, this is a really interesting piece of data that we collected back in 2015. We've actually asked this question many, many times, and it always shows remarkable ability to predict elections. What we did in the fall of 2015, before there were any Democratic or Republican, when there were lots of Democratic and Republican candidates, rather, we asked voters in Ohio, all other things being equal, would you prefer the Republicans to control the White House or the Democrats? And as you can see, the Republicans had an edge in most of the regions of the state. Now, this is not a big surprise, shouldn't be a big surprise. It's very hard for for the presidency to be controlled three terms in a row. That's an uphill battle. It happens very, very rarely. So the Democrats, coming off of the Obama administration, faced a historical hurdle there, a very common hurdle. In addition, as we now know, there was a tremendous amount of discontent out there in the country. So you see, it looked like it was going to be a good election for the Republicans, and that's one reason that 17 people ran for the Republican nomination, because they didn't see these exact data, but they saw data similar to these that showed that it would probably be a pretty good opportunity. And I think Democrats, in response, rallied around their strongest candidate, Secretary Clinton. She didn't end up winning, but from the perspective of these numbers, she looked like a pretty strong candidate, anticipating she'd be running against a strong Republican. Of course, nobody anticipated Donald Trump. We all got that one wrong. But it's kind of interesting how well, I mean, these sort of show how the campaign worked out. Down in southeastern Ohio, Trump pretty much captured that discontent. These numbers show that 63% of the folks we polled wanted a change, party change in the White House. Trump got 70% of that area. But notice he didn't do particularly well in central Ohio. There are 55% of the voters said they wanted a party change, and yet Trump only got 49% of the vote. So, you know, there was some cost to his candidacy in that area as well. Up in northeastern Ohio, that's where a lot of the attention was, Trump's appeal to blue-collar voters. And that certainly helped him statewide, there's no doubt about it. But he only performed about where the level of discontent was, or the desire to have a new administration. And he actually ended up performing exactly as these numbers would suggest in southwestern Ohio. Now again, there you see the northeast-southwest dynamic in Ohio, right? The most Republican area found a way to accommodate an unusual Republican candidate. The most Democratic area was not as responsive to an unusual Republican candidate. So it's just kind of interesting to look. We find that this particular measures, are really, really interesting because it gives us a sense of the baseline partisan attitudes towards the White House without candidates, you know, messing it up. But in any event, let me just conclude here, and then we might have time for a few questions. Political culture influences the way Ohio voters think about the political process and issues. We have that variations of an individualistic political culture that's captured well by region. And the major variations help explain issue positions, attitudes towards the political process, and voting behavior across the regions of the state. Well, thank you so much for your attention. I know I've hit you with a lot of data, so our college professors do. And in the past, these slides have been made available to all the members, so if you want to look at them more carefully, and if you have questions, please feel free to contact me. But are there any questions that I or comments I could address? Yes, ma'am.
From a voter turnout perspective, does numbers-wise, does the urban voter versus the rural voter turn out more? I mean, when you're looking at the state, who is more likely to carry the state, a rural voter or an urban voter?
Well, historically, urban areas have voted less, particularly central cities, and that has a lot to do with the socioeconomic status of people who live in cities. Many rural areas have fairly high voter turnout. In some cases, that's a little bit odd because some of the rural areas are not, the people there are not particularly well off, but they're smaller areas in terms of population. There's a lot of communal spirit around voting. In this particular election, we saw the overall turnout was about the same as 2012 at the state level. But if you look region by region, you see some big differences. The tendency of urban voters, particularly those who live in the core cities, to not turn out as much was magnified this year. Many fewer votes in the major cities, particularly in Cleveland, and much higher turnout in many of the rural areas. So, and then if you look at it by region, within region, you can see other patterns. You know, there were some counties where there's just a big turnout across the board, and other counties where you know there was a decline. So in that sense, it's the overall level of turnout masks what was really going on, right? Which is that some people were turning out in larger numbers, some people in lower numbers. You know, a certain number of people. We had a record number of people voting for write-ins. There were only 18 people that are eligible to have a write-in, but there were over 200 names written in. I had this fear when I saw that story that one of my students had written in my name, which would be a very bad idea, but nobody did that. So we see a little, overall continuity, but a good bit of jumbling within the state. Sure. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. Sheer numbers of the urban population is versus the rural. Like, does the
The urban population's bigger in terms of potential voters. There's no doubt about it. But it's important to remember that you have the central cities and then you have the suburbs. And suburbs are, that's where the largest number of votes are these days, actually in the suburbs. And some suburbs are working class suburbs and some are upper class suburbs and some are Democratic and some are Republican. But it'd be very difficult to get elected in Ohio without a strong suburban vote. But you can get elected without a strong rural vote or a strong central city vote. Yes, sir.
Following up on Maura's question, I like how you talked about the five Ohios. I think kind of a lot of us looking at the map now almost see two Ohios, right? I mean, it's the inner cities and maybe the close-in suburbs are blue, and then basically everything else, the rural communities, the small towns, a lot of the suburbs are red. What do you see there as far as terms of shifting voting patterns, political culture, demographics? I mean, do you think that the five Ohio model will hold up long term, or do you really see a shift toward more of a urban, close in, suburban model that basically trends one way, and then a rural county, farther out suburb, small town model that goes the other way?
Well, I think the five Ohios will stand for the foreseeable future. And it happens in sort of strange ways. For instance, downtown Cincinnati, inner city Cincinnati, and inner city Cleveland share a lot in common. But inner city Cleveland's markedly more Democratic than inner city Cincinnati, even though they're both heavily Democratic. And that's the impact of political culture. Now, within those regions, there are the shifts you're talking about. When I came to Ohio 30 years ago, it was not uncommon for Republicans to elect big city mayors. That hasn't happened in a long time, right? Because inner cities are becoming very, very Democratic. Meanwhile, the suburban areas have grown. And while suburban areas are diverse, they tend to be more Republican. So, and particularly the what some people call the exurbs, right? The suburbs that are drifting out into rural areas. And most of the time, that experience actually intensifies the Republican nature of those areas. But you have two kinds of Republicans, right? You have rural Republicans, and then you have these very wealthy people who can afford to live way out from the city where they work. And so oftentimes on local issues or state issues, you'll see a big divide, right, between these two kinds of Republicans. In presidential elections, you tend not to see that. So I think the five Ohios will stand, but within those, I think we're seeing a shift from the cities to the suburbs and influencing the rural areas as well. If you look at all 88 counties, you see a kind of a sea of red. Because lots of those rural areas tend to be Republican. They don't have very many people in them, though. But if you put them all together, it's significant. But you would see that all across the United States. I don't know how many of you looked at a county-level map on election night, and you will see you know, red everywhere, right? And then there's these big islands of blue, which, of course, most of the people in the country live, right, in those metropolitan areas. Yes, sir.
On the map that you had, the five Ohios, is there any distinguishing reason why you drew the borders that way? I was looking at Ashland. You had Ashland County as central Ohio, and sometimes I thought of it as northeast Ohio. But
it has to do with an analysis of the politics of the regions. That's why we did it. Those particular boundaries, we can go look at them again, just predicts, whoops. Oh, I think I screwed something up. Oh, well, sorry about that. But it has to do with just, you know, the influence of these cultural variables. But on the boundaries, you can make really good arguments about putting them in one way or the other. Because, you know, the farther you get away from the dominant central cities, as you might expect, the more the political culture attenuates itself. So the boundaries are always somewhat arbitrary, and particularly if you do it by county, right? Because a county is a big aggregation. Most people think, for instance, of Medina County up to Summit County next to Akron as a very rural place. But parts of it are heavily suburbanized, and they're really more in the Cleveland-Akron orbit. So, you know, looking at it by county is convenient, but it does have its limitations because counties are diverse internally as well. Yes, sir.
So if you look at the first slide, you talk about service versus order, and you kind of broke out that way. Is the belief that those residents who live in more rural or suburban areas have less expectation of services as those in urban areas are more service-oriented? Is that what kind of guides that model?
You know, in many respects, that's the case. You know, urban areas, if you will, the services per capita is higher because population density is much larger. But it's a little bit more than just that. It's also an idea about what government should do. Yeah, right. So that's why you see that. Now, you know, we can, this is a simple question to ask people their priorities, but you can easily critique the question. For instance, you could argue that social order involves a set of services, right? Police, fire, EMS, and so forth. And you could also argue that a lot of the services we provide, education, healthcare, and recreation programs are a way to maintain order, right? So at some point, these things kind of meld together. But there is that sense of that the northern part of the state, if you will, is much more service-oriented than order-oriented. But it does have a lot to do with the composition of the regions themselves. Yes, sir.
In looking at Democratic and Republican geographically, you know, makes sense, but you've ever done it by socioeconomic status to see who's more Democratic oriented, who's more Republican oriented?
Well, historically, lower status people have tended to be more Democratic in their, at least since the New Deal, since the 1930s. Upper status people have tended to be more Republican over that period. But you know, there are lots of interesting variations because social status, while very, very important explicant for political views, is not the only one. So for instance, in this last election, Donald Trump did very well with working class whites, right? And many of them pretty low socioeconomic status. Did not do particularly well with working class blacks, right? So there's a racial issue there, but also there's a status issue. And many upper status Republicans, particularly suburban women, really didn't care for Donald Trump, right? And you know, if you look at the exit polls and you break it down that way, you'll see that those folks tended to vote for the woman in the race. I mean, you know, for Secretary Clinton. So, socioeconomic status is a powerful explainer of partisanship. But there are other factors that play into that as well.
It's convoluted, I guess, but from a legislative perspective, I don't know if we can do this to strip ethnicity or gender out of the political equation and look at legislation just based on economy. You know, how would you do that in the context of what you presented to us? It's big for me to do that because my constituent base is predominantly.
You know, this is so much easier to do with issues than it is with partisanship, because partisanship's complicated. And you really can look at particular issues that do provide relief.
I think it's critical that we do that.
Though. Yeah, right. It is really important to figure out how to do that. You know, in any particular piece of legislation, there may be that the General Assembly might be considering, there may be strong socioeconomic issues behind that. But then on other issues, it may be purely cultural, right, and not really socioeconomic. But I think it is important, and that can be done, not with these particular kind of data, but with other data, because these are random sample surveys of 1,000 Ohioans. And so to break it down, even by region, pretty tough, right? And if you go below region, there are too few people to be accurate. Yes, one more, please. Yes.
Quick question. All registered voters in the state of Ohio, what percentage are registered as Republican and what percentage is registered as Democrats?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer because Ohio actually doesn't have party registration. If you look at partisanship, it's whether or not you voted in a primary. And historically, it's been pretty even. Right now, I think there's more Republican primary voters because the last primary was last March, which was, there was much more action on the Republican side. But we do know that a lot of people who had previously voted in Democratic primaries crossed over to vote in the Republican primary. But if you look at self-described partisanship, what you find is that among registered voters, the Republicans have a slight edge. Now, we much higher percentage of the population is registered today than in the past because we made it a lot easier to register. But a lot of people for whom it is easy to register don't necessarily vote, right? So, if you look at self-identified partisanship, there is a Republican advantage, although very large number of people will tell pollsters they're independents, right? So, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your attention.